courses must be completed online. It may be a semester course or a year-long course, but an entire course must be completed online. For the economics must include financial literacy. So students who take the required high school economics course, financial literacy content must be included as part of that course. We are currently doing a study which is in final draft form, which we will provide back to you, on the cost of providing a separate financial literacy course as part of the high school requirements in the future. So you'll get that information from us. I believe it's due October 1st. Very new, as of last year, are new diploma designations. This isn't a different diploma. These aren't different tracks for students. These are designations in addition to the standard diploma. So all students work toward the standard diploma, but if they meet additional requirements, they can earn one of these two or both of these designations. So for the scholar's designation, it includes earning credit in Algebra 2 in addition to the Algebra 1 in Geometry. It includes earning a credit in statistics or an equally rigorous math course. Those could be accelerated mechanisms. It includes, in addition to the biology credit, a chemistry or physics credit, and a third science course that's equally rigorous to chemistry or physics. So a student to get a scholar's diploma would take biology, chemistry or physics, and an equally rigorous course to chemistry or physics. Two credits in world language, which, as you know, are that's required for acceptance in the university system. A credit in accelerated mechanism, advanced placement, international baccalaureate, the ACE program, or dual enrollment. One of those credits needs to be earned through accelerated mechanism. They must pass the biology EOC as opposed to just take it and have it be 30% of their course grade. And they must pass the U.S. history end of course assessment as opposed to just having to take it and have it be 30% of the course grade. So students who fulfill those requirements will earn a scholar designation in addition to their standard diploma. For the merit designation, a student that passes an industry certification exam from the list, and we have posted that list, will include have a designation on their diploma, a merit designation, added to their standard diploma. So a student could graduate with a standard diploma and both these designations.
I'm going to interrupt you there with a question. What communication are the school districts having with parents? Because I know this applies to the freshman class. So what communications are you advising the districts to have with parents about these two different designations?
Thank you, Chair. One of the requirements of this bill is that the school districts provide parents and students information about these designations and about the high school requirements beginning this year, the new high school requirements. We've provided technical assistance with those requirements, and we also sent out a back-to-school memo that reiterated the requirements of the bill.
And so I'm going to ask a question that I know other members here have a question as well. What is the timeline for that communication to take place? Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. It needs to take place immediately, if not upon entry to high school this year. And also it needs to be part of the middle grades career and technology course.
Okay, so I know Representative Wren, you weren't. I think you had a question. You recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going over the basic requirements. There are three credits in social studies, but you list four topics. Are some of these half-credit courses?
Recognized.
Thank you. Yes, economics and U.S. government are both semester courses.
Representative Zimmerman for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe last year we agreed that even though this applies to the incoming freshman class, that any student that met the requirements could still get that designation now. And a number of parents at the school that I teach at have concerns or complaints that their kids meet all the qualifications, but they're having to go back and take the end-of-course exam for biology when they took the biology course back when they were freshmen, and that it was 3 years ago, and do we address that in any way?
Do you have an answer to that?
Chairman, yes, we are hearing from lots of parents are very excited about this opportunity for their students. So we have 12th graders who started high school before some of these requirements were put in place. So their options right now are to go back and take those any end-of-course exam that they didn't already take. We will discuss and plan to discuss different issues that may have may eliminate a group of students from some of these opportunities and see if we can identify some solutions prior to the end of the school year. But we're also hearing U.S. history is another one that, some of our parents are already communicating. The good news is parents are hearing about this because they're communicating with us that they want their kids to have a designation. The uncomfortable news is right now those options aren't available, and we'll have to problem solve through that.
So you're actively working with the school districts on that issue then?
I think this will require some possible changes to the law based on the information that I have. So our first discussions are with staff, legislative staff, and discussions we're having here to see if we can problem solve and come up with some options.
Are there any other questions? Representative?
Good to see you again.
Nice to see you.
Okay. In speaking with teachers in Broward, in the district I represent, they are talking about the fact that some students, as you said, who may want to go back and take these courses, they're not going to have the time that for them to take it and to take the tests and do everything. So are we making any kind of arrangements for maybe tutoring of these of students who want to take the exams, and get the designations?
You're recognized,
Chairman. The greatest gap, they can sit for the end-of-course exams, which are part of the requirement, and the biggest issue most of these students have. The far majority of the students that would, as a 12th grader, be eligible have taken the courses. It's the assessments that go with those courses. And there are two concerns with that. They can sit for the end-of-course exams. There's nothing to prohibit them from that. But they may have taken the courses that prepare them for the exam several years ago. So it's how to close that gap, whether it could be in tutoring prior to the EOC, or if there are other requirements that match them and are more rigorous than this, that might be a discussion that we can identify other options for those students who are definitely accelerated as current seniors and have fulfilled all of but one or two requirements that are an EOC that was put in place after they entered high school. So I think your idea of tutoring is a great one, and what that would look like and how we would help fit that in their schedule.
Go ahead.
How would that work then with the industry certification? How would a student who has met all those requirements now be able to go ahead?
You're recognized.
Chairman, if they've been part of an industry certification program throughout high school, there should be nothing to prohibit them from taking those certifications and if passing them being eligible. If they've not been part of those programs up to now and they're a current 12th grader, it's probably not likely that they'll have the opportunity to fit that in their schedule.
Before we move on, I would ask that you reach out to the school districts again. I have a concern in my own district that the level of communication with the parents is not what I think this body desires. I have a freshman who is the first class for this, mm-hmm. and just as a mom, either I've completely missed it or the communication is just not what it needs to be. So I'm concerned that we may be having some district staff who are deciding for the student and for the parent which of these designations they think is appropriate. And I want to make sure that is not happening. I don't believe that's the legislative intent, behind this, and I want to make sure that those parents and those students are actively engaged in determining their own designation. So if you could follow up and then report back to us at the next committee where each and every school district is in the communication process with their parents, that would be very helpful in making sure that our legislative intent is fulfilled.
Absolutely.
Thank you. And continue.
Okay. So those are the designations. For Excel, we've had accelerated graduation options for students. We've had two 18-credit graduation opportunities for students. One is in the area of career and technology, and the other in college readiness. And how this has changed is now a student who has fulfilled the requirements of the 18-credit option, which means they have fulfilled the requirements listed here, the new high school requirements. Those are the core credits, meaning the mathematics requirements, the science credits, the social studies credits, and the English language arts. And in addition to fulfilling those requirements and passing the algebra assessment, which is required of all students, if they complete three of eight of their electives, they qualify for an Excel option or an early graduation option. This takes effect immediately. We're getting lots of questions from our districts about that, concerned that maybe students will just graduate at the end of the first semester of their senior year, and I think we're okay with that, but they're working through those issues. But this is a new option for students. They can graduate early and move forward without the requirement of five of their elective credits. Remediation requirements have changed. The former law required that if a student scored level 1 or 2 in English language arts, reading, or mathematics, level 1 was required for reading to be in an intensive reading course. Now that remediation can take place in an English language arts or reading course as opposed to a separate remedial course. Mathematics remediation has been, they have been able to provide that in their core math class, so they don't have to take a separate math class. We still definitely encourage school districts and schools to provide, if a student really needs that intense remediation outside of the English language arts class, to make that available to them, but it's no longer required. And this will help open up schedules for a lot of kids, particularly in high school, to fit some of those other requirements in. And at this point, Chair, I think I'll move forward and introduce Chancellor Duckworth. He is the Chancellor of Career and Adult Education, and he'll talk to you more about industry certification and CAPE. Thank you.
Good afternoon. It's my pleasure this afternoon to talk a little bit about the industry certifications and to talk about some of the components of last year's legislation and what's happening there. But as I begin my remarks this afternoon, I wanted to talk very specifically about the CAPE Academy and the fact that when the CAPE legislation originally passed in 2007, about all of the opportunities that it created for students across the board in education. It also created a tremendous opportunity for business and industry to connect with education on helping students connect with those future careers. So it's really been a tremendous success from that standpoint. As we look at the chart or the slide that's in front of you, you will see that you'll look at our 2012-13 numbers, and again, that's preliminary data, but we really expect that number to continue to grow and get larger and larger as we go forward. So far, from 11-12 to 12-13, there's been a 26% increase in the number of industry certifications that were earned by students. As we move on to the next slide, and we talk about the industry certification articulation agreements, I will remind you that Florida has been a leader in state articulation policies that enable students to move expeditiously and efficiently through the certificate and degree completion process. And to highlight a few or this or student articulations, I want to remind you that this is based on third-party recognition of predetermined knowledge, skills, and abilities resulting in the award of an industry certification or licensure known as the Gold Standard Career Pathway Agreements. The intent is to guarantee the award of a minimum number of college credits for students entering specific AAS degrees, which train students for occupations requiring a two-year technical degree. And this is a very rigorous process that these industry articulation agreements go through. There's a number of groups that review these articulation agreements. In some cases, faculty groups do not recommend any credit because they feel that the certification is not rigorous enough to warrant credit. So there are some that actually are introduced, but because faculty members don't feel that it's rigorous enough to earn college credit, it's left off the list in that instance. Some of the different committees that the articulation agreements go through, it starts off with the Occupational Education Standing Committee, which is part of the occupational deans from the state college system. It then goes through the Council of Instructional Affairs from the college system, then an Articulation Coordinating Committee, and finally on to the State Board of Education for final approval. So as you can see, it's a very rigorous process that the articulation agreements go through. As we look at the next slide here, I want to highlight just a few items here. Since 2009, over 117 Gold Standard Career Pathway Articulation Agreements have been established and incorporated into state board rule. And 109 of those certifications, as you can see, earn between 3 to 9 hours of college credit, depending on the certification. Also, 8 of those agreements allow students to earn 10 to 36 hours of college credit, which really provides our students with a head start when it comes to post-secondary education. To give you an example of some of those certifications, the Cisco Certified Network Associate renders 12 college credits to both computer engineering technology and network servicing or network services technology. These are 2 degrees which train for occupations that are in high demand here in Florida. Also, the licensed practical nurse, which results in 10 credit college hours toward the registered nurse program or the associate's degree in nursing. So 2 great examples of certifications that students can obtain through the articulation agreement pieces and move forward down the line there. The next piece that was a part of the legislation from last year was the development of a post-secondary industry certification funding list. My division has been working very closely with Chancellor Hanna with the Florida colleges on this inaugural list. We've identified items on the list that will be eligible for funding for the 13-14 school year in the occupational areas identified by the 2013 appropriations. As a reminder, those areas that we were looking at for the targeted areas for funding included automotive service technology, cybersecurity, cloud virtualization, advanced manufacturing, welding, Federal Aviation Administration airframe mechanics and power plant mechanics, pharmacy technicians, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning technicians. So as you can see there, we've been working on this one very diligently, and at this point we plan to have that list available in draft form within the next couple of days, posted to our website, with hopefully the opportunity for it to go before our State Board of Education for final approval in November. So we're working through those details.
I'm going to interrupt you right here, and then I'll open it up for other questions that may be out there. So as you look at these new programs that are available in the different schools, do you have, out of all these programs, How many schools within Florida are actually able to provide each of these, and do we know where they are? It seems to me we have pockets of excellence where here and there we've got these terrific programs. But I'm just curious, do we have full coverage throughout the entire state of Florida with these types of programs, or are they, you know, kind of in a magnet, if you will, within two or three of the larger school districts? Can you comment on the availability of these programs?
Well, first, I can provide some additional information to the committee on this one, but I can tell you that a lot of it comes down to capacity for a local district to be able to offer these programs. In other words, funding the facilities to be able to offer certain types of programs. Another piece might be the ability to hire faculty to come in and to teach these courses that lead to industry certifications. And the other piece that's out there, depending on the local economy and industries that are in the area, business and industries that are in the area, that also drives which industry certifications that may be available in some areas, simply because of the, you know, the business connection and the opportunity to for the schools to be able to connect with those programs for internships and other opportunities. But we can get back to you with that additional information and kind of show you where those certification areas and program areas are around the state.
That would be very helpful. Do you have any other questions, Representative?
Yeah, no, I don't do that. Good afternoon. Do all school areas have vocational training centers or technical training centers in their areas? I heard what you asked, but are there certain school districts that have more technical ability to teach these courses than others?
You're recognized.
Yes, there are, currently we have 47 technical centers, which really serve the post-secondary portion for the districts across the state. I would say in all 67 school districts, there's some form of career and technical education in those school districts. But again, it goes back to the ability of that or the capacity of that local district to offer certain or specific types of programs within that district. And it varies from district to district on what they're able to offer out there. But they all offer something from middle school through high school or through 12th grade.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Thank you. And are the school districts allowed to have persons who are certified in these various technical areas, but who may own a business? Is it possible that where you don't have an actual technical center per se, that the students or that person can come from that automotive business that he or she runs into the school system, and vice versa? Can the students then go to that to his place of business to look at actually hands-on? Because what I'm feeling is, and I'm hearing too, is that students are not getting the hands-on training that they need for these various technical subjects or areas. They're just not getting it. And as our chair has just referenced, are the areas and pockets where there's nothing available. So are you going to be looking at what she's asking you, also what I'm asking you, of another way of delivering the course material or the subject matter to the students?
You're recognized.
Thank you. There's a few questions there, and I'm going to attempt to answer all of those questions. So if I miss something, please feel free to ask again there. First of all, when we look at, let's use automotive as an example. For automotive programs, the way career and technical education is set up, there is an opportunity for those individuals who have business experience, for very specifically like in automotive, with the proper certification, mainly the industry certification, to be able to come into the classroom and teach those courses when they have the facilities available on that local campus. There are instances, I believe, where maybe the local school district is unable to have a facility there on campus. So they may have special agreements either with the college or the local technical center to provide that training. I would probably say, you know, for students to be able to go into a business, you would then be talking about maybe an internship type of opportunity or maybe a shadowing type of opportunity for students. That's a part of career education that's available to students out there. But I will tell you that programs like that, you find that in pockets around the state. It's not something that you see. There's some great programs out there, but not every single district, I would say, not all of them have the capacity to be able to offer all or even some of those top programs in those local districts. So what we try to do, we try to work with the local districts as much as possible to try to connect with the local industry to find out what's out there and to work within the resources they have available to them that's out there. But, you know, in some instances, it just comes down to resources for those districts to be able to provide those opportunities for students, especially those hands-on opportunities.
Representative Bracey, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. I think you covered it, but I guess I'm trying to get at if the districts are not able to offer these industry certification classes because of resources, what's next? I mean, I think you kind of said you'll do your best to kind of help them connect with the resources in the area. But if it's not there, you know, how can we work through that?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, one of the things we're trying to do, we work with local districts, you know, as I mentioned earlier, in relation to finding those existing resources and connecting with certifications that they can possibly offer. For example, we've been working with districts and putting communications out to districts related to foundational courses that are offered in the middle school level around technology, because we feel very strongly that students need those technology skills early on so that they can be successful once they go on to ninth grade and higher, you know, secondary programs and also post-secondary programs. There are some certifications that are out there that I believe, I would say there's probably certifications that are on the list right now that any district could go through the list and find some certification area that they could build into their current system. But it would be a matter of, again, matching those two areas that could be supported by not only their current financial setting, but also supported by the facilities they may have available. And so we really have to work with those districts on a one-on-one basis to determine what's available and what resources are available to them. So.
Any other questions? All right, you can continue.
All right, thank you. The next slide here, as we look at those post-secondary industry certifications earned, this goes back to the post-secondary industry certification list that we were asked to develop. And as you can see here, if you'll look at the red bar, it shows the certifications identified as being funding eligible by the chancellors for this year. The blue bar shows all of the certifications from the list. So in other words, the ones that are shown in red are those certifications that were connected with the targeted industry areas that were identified in the legislation. And I think one of the reasons why you're seeing some of the larger numbers here is because many of the technical centers, and when I go to the next slide and share with you the Florida college system, you'll find that the college system and the technical centers have both been offering certifications, many of which in some instances have been tied to a targeted list or to areas that were of high demand. And we only expect, since there is appropriation connected, that this list and this number of certifications will continue to grow because there are resources to help encourage that to happen. And with your permission, I will speak to the college system piece here for Chancellor Hanna this afternoon by saying that, you know, this is early on, and we fully expect this to grow as the college's occupational deans really begin to offer more of these kinds of programs out there. But they have been very involved in the industry certification process throughout the last several years here.
So I'm going to interrupt you with a question here, and then we'll open it up for other questions. So I heard you say that the red is for those targeted areas.
That's correct.
And so the blue are for the non-targeted areas.
That's correct.
Give us an example of what the blue might be. And I mean, it seems it's pretty evenly distributed between the red, at least on the school district technical centers. If you go back a slide, it was pretty evenly distributed between the red and the blue. Okay. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, relate it to the blue. Okay. Again, those all other certifications, that might include everything from some of the very specific technology certifications. Maybe they might be offering Microsoft. They might be offering Adobe, preparing students for careers and maybe in a technology-related area, Adobe certifications. They might be offering, I'm trying to think of some right offhand here that might be not on the targeted list. I have Kathleen Taylor here, who's my bureau chief, that might be able to assist me here. Yes, health science would be one of those. And I think there may be some others also, certifications that might be out there. So there's several other certifications that would actually be out there. We can provide kind of a listing of the ones that are on the targeted list and some of the ones that are not on the targeted list. In fact, that would be part of the draft list that we're going to post here in the next several days.
Do we have any other questions before we move forward? Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And I believe that's the end of the presentation, if there are any other questions.
Okay, members, last opportunity for questions. Okay, Vice Chair Diaz, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question relates to, we're talking about the college system working hand in hand with the local school districts at this point in the vocational programs. How is the synergy or the choosing of the programs that are available, making sure that we're efficient in what the college system is providing is not necessarily the same thing as the school district? In other words, are we competing in a lot of areas where the school systems and the college system are competing for the same students, or are we able to identify the programs by region so that there's not, you know, an oversaturation of a particular area?
You're recognized.
Okay. Well, first, I will talk very specifically about the secondary programs. Okay, so from a secondary program standpoint, we try to develop articulation agreements so that there's an articulation for those students to have a clear pathway onto post-secondary education from that standpoint. So in that case, there's a very clear, very strong connection that's in place there. In those local districts where they have a technical centers, there may be some overlap in some instances. What we found, and we're actually looking more into that, you might have a technical center that might be offering an automotive program and also a state college that may be offering an automotive type of program, just as an example there. We're finding that because these areas are in such high demand that it works really well because students have an opportunity to go one or two different areas depending on their needs, very specific career plan that they have in mind, and also depending on the amount of course offerings that the technical center might be able to offer. So that may be something that might enter into that student's decision-making process when they're going into some type of post-secondary education. I will say that this year there will be further discussions related to the technical centers regarding some of the things that the technical centers can do to enhance the opportunities that are available for students. And part of that discussion will involve how we can make sure that the technical center system piece and the college system can work very closely in developing those partnerships so that at the end of the day, students can, you know, have a very clear pathway to a career and career success. So we will have further discussions on that, I know, during this legislative session.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, members. So to close, Let me thank you for your participation here today, and I want to lay out for you what we will be doing in the next couple of committee meetings so that you can come prepared. So in the interim, our committee staff have been working very hard on the subject of middle school reform. And our October and November meetings have been set aside to address this very important area of a student's educational development. As you may know, national research has focused on the importance of middle school grades instruction and student learning in order to improve their high school success and to increase graduation rates and improve the student's post-secondary readiness. So in today's packet, I'm going to ask you to take this home with you. In today's packet are a few research articles that have been identified by staff that address key middle school practices. So let me just review with you what you're going to find in the back of the packet. First is a Johns Hopkins University study that identifies early warning indicators based on attendance, behavior, and academic performance that can be effectively used to identify students as early as the sixth grade, those students who are at risk of not graduating from high school, and providing a framework for effective academic intervention. So I'd ask that you review that. The second component is a study by the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. It's entitled Gaining Ground in the Middle Grades. The study highlights what policymakers can do to support the middle school grades. You'll also find a report published by the Southern Regional Education Board that lists the 10 best practices in middle grades. These recommended practices are based upon findings from a study of the most and the least improved middle schools in the Making Middle Grades Work Network, which spans 16 states. So I'm going to ask that you read these materials before you come back in October. And to begin thinking about the changes that we can make to improve our middle school grades and our students' performance. I ask you to talk to your superintendents, talk to your principals, talk to the moms and dads, talk with the teachers about what they think we can do to improve our middle school grades and to engage our students to have a more rigorous experience in the middle grades. And then I'm going to ask that you provide your input. I was really pleased at the last session how we all came together, we collaborated, and we listened respectfully to each other. And I'm going to ask that we follow that same process this year. We're going to collaborate, and we're going to listen, and we're going to talk through. So at the end of next session, we're going to all come together, and we're going to feel really proud about the work that this committee has done. Past middle grades reforms in Florida have included establishing minimum course requirements in core subject areas for promotion to the ninth grade, requiring career and education planning, requiring a civics education course that counts the 30% of the student's final course grade. It has involved synchronizing middle and high school A through F grading scales and requiring intensive remedial instruction for students who struggle on the FCAT reading and math assessments. So to help us understand the middle grades, we're going to convene at our October meeting. We're going to convene a panel of leaders in the middle grades education. And this panel will provide some unique perspectives on the current state of our middle school instruction, our middle grades teacher preparation, the benefits of forming partnerships to improve student achievement, the importance of utilizing interdisciplinary teams and small learning communities, and innovations in keeping students engaged and ready for the rigors of high school and beyond. So we have a very impressive group of people who are going to be with us at this next committee meeting, and that's why I really need for you to read through these articles so that you can come prepared to take advantage of these experts that are going to be with us in October. And let me just give you very briefly who we're going to have with us. We're going to have Larry Langbrake of SRI International and Vivian Fueo of the University of South Florida. These are two collaborators in the Sun Bay Digital Mathematics Project. This is a project, it's a collaborative project developed by USF St. Pete College of Education, SRI International, and the Helios Education Foundation, along with the Pinellas County School District, which aims to deepen student understanding of middle grades, mathematics, and algebraic concepts, and to provide robust professional development to middle grades teachers to help them integrate digital instruction into their classroom and instruct mathematics in an engaging manner. We will also have Dr. Paul George, who is a distinguished professor of education emeritus from the University of Florida. Go Gators. Dr. George has been identified by the Middle School Journal as the number one ranking scholar in the field of middle school education. He's published over 150 works, and so we're delighted that he's going to be here with us in October. We also will have Dr. Don Pemberton, who is the director of the Lassiter Center at the University of Florida. He has helped to conceptualize, implement, evaluate, and scale up research-based multi-partner initiatives to improve student learning, educator practice, child well-being, and school performance. And then we're going to have a number of education leaders from Broward, St. John's, and Wakulla school districts who will be here with us to share what they're doing within their school districts. So you can see that in October we're going to have a pretty exciting meeting, and I really need each of you to come prepared, ready to ask questions and take advantage of these people who will be with us. The November subcommittee is also going to be dedicated to that conversation of middle school reform. DOE will present some key facts and figures concerning middle grades, including but not limited to the course and the testing requirements, course availability that we have, Excel options, career and education planning, and on and on. So that gives you a picture of what November will look like. Finally, in our December meeting, we will be in large part dedicated to a careful review of draft legislation that will streamline and further clarify certain provisions. We're going to repeal some excessive district reporting requirements. It's going to be another repealer bill. This bill will look at the entire school code. Will not be limited to middle school, but will take the entire school code. So we will be looking at how we can streamline and further repeal some unnecessary and redundant language. So we have a busy agenda ahead of us over these next several committee meetings. And if you have any questions or issues, please feel free. You all have my cell number. Reach out to me, and I would love to hear from you. Any comments? I'll open the floor for comments before we close out this meeting. Okay. So thank you for being here. I ask you to come next meeting prepared. And with that, Representative Diaz moves we rise. Without objections, show the meeting adopted. Motion adopted. Our meeting is adjourned.